the horn is gone.
The Brock and the Roger Delorier Rigger out in the lead right now. Rigger out in the lead right now. The Brock and the Roger Delorier Rigger out in the lead right now. The Brock and the Roger Delorier Rigger out in the lead right now. The Brock and the Roger Delorier Rigger out in the lead right now.
Summer Bird, Rags to Riches. Empire Maker. Lemon Drop Kid. Colonial Affair. Thunder Gulch. Those are some of the past winners at the Belmont Stakes, part of horse racing's Triple Crown. We'll spend a day at Belmont. In fact, this whole hour, we're on horseback. This is Hearing Voices from NPR. I'm Barrett Golding. You're listening to the sounds of a carriage race at the annual Stampede in Austin, Manitoba, put together by Christian Colon and Chantal Dumas.
Looking for the track time of 102.
Will a man in the lead, Richard Gallagher and Duncan Livestock. Duncan Livestock going about a half length.
Bruce Davidson has been a member of the U.S. equestrian team since 1971. He is a world-class rider, trainer, and breeder. NPR's David Mulpas visited Chesterland Farms in Unionville, Pennsylvania, when Bruce Davidson and his horse J.J. Babu were training for the 1984 Olympics.
That's it. Don't give so much over the neck. Now get back. Don't. Turn right, turn right, turn right. Yeah, now you'll have room to get on your line. Otherwise, you would not have. Take your time here. Settle down, collect, sit down, collect, pull his teeth out, collect. You see, you're too fast.
I know.
Now turn around and jump it back and collect. You're just standing up and letting him pull you forward. I like horses in any capacity, so whether they're racing or they're eventing or they're showing or whatever, horses are an industry, they are a way of life, and people do them in a very serious way. And I'm one of those people. I don't think that it's unusual for people to make a life out of animals.
Bruce Davidson's addiction to horses began when he first started riding them at age 6. Over the years, he has become one of the outstanding event riders of the century, twice winning world championships, and he was a member of the U.S. equestrian teams that won a silver medal at the 1972 Olympic Games and a gold medal in 76. Davidson's specialty is the three-day event, which includes cross-country competition, a test of endurance and speed, dressage, the skill of demonstrating perfect harmony and communication between horse and rider, and show jumping, primarily an obedience test. Preparation for Olympic-level eventing competition is as long and demanding for both horse and rider as any Olympic sport. Success requires a unique bonding between a pair of superb athletes.
I started training full-time in 1970.
What is that like? What does all that training involve over 13 years?
Well, it requires a daily discipline and high involvement daily. In other words, in this game, it's not just my own physical condition, but it's the horse's as well. And you can't go out and just buy an animal that knows all the tricks that it needs to know to compete internationally, so you have to train them. In that process, you have a certain number that get hurt, a certain number that have setbacks, a certain number that don't have the courage or the speed or the soundness, the bravery or the talent. So you have to not only find the animal with all of that, but train him through the soundness problems, through the conditioning problems, and any other bad luck that happens, and produce him at the Olympic Games to beat everybody else on a given weekend.
You use something called interval training.
Right.
Explain that concept. What does it mean?
Well, it's not used just in horses. It's really was started for people. And it goes by the theory that, well, the heart is a muscle, and it's strengthened by exercise and rest and exercise and rest, rather than pushing it to the point that it can't do what you're asking it to do. The same would be true of a back or a thigh or any other muscle, that you will make it stronger by resting it before you make it tired than you will by pushing it until it is tired, and then you run on ligaments, and that's when you hurt things.
You have horses swim here, and we saw one swim earlier today. And was that interval training?
Well, they swim more than one session, yes. We'd never push them in one session to what we think would be their maximum. We push them to, well and truly, into a work cycle, but we never push them to where we would anticipate them being having any fatigue.
Good girl. Good girl. Because you can work them without getting on their backs and without the pounding on their legs. They can get a lot of exercise. So can I. Come on. Girl.
The other aspect that I think is great about the water is that you can really give a horse a real hard work, a real proper work. And at no time does he put any pounding on his legs. So if he has in any way strained something, and you want to keep him in training, and you want to keep his condition program stepping forward, so that, because our competition season is only at certain times during the year, it's not whenever you're ready. You have to be ready when they exist. So you can keep a horse's training program going along and progressing and not risk further injury to the legs by having to gallop him on the ground.
One more time, Nancy. Good girl.
Why are you here at Chesterland? What's so special about training here?
Well, I particularly come to Chesterland to train with Bruce Davidson. This place is also very special for training because of the terrain and the facilities.
Nancy Winter of St. Charles, Illinois, has dreamed about being on the Olympic equestrian team since her late teens. Now in her early 40s, Winter believes her goal is achievable. She's devoting almost the entire year away from her family to pre-Olympic competitions and training.
To train a horse to an advanced level competition, you would have worked him for 4 years at least, doing preparatory work. And then the year that you are going to compete at advanced or international level, you'd start a regular conditioning schedule about 8 weeks before the first major competition. And we do usually gallop twice a week, an interval training system of wind conditioning. And then 2 days a week we do dressage work, flat work, maybe 1 day a week jump. And a lot of just plain miles of walking and trotting over these hills.
Horses are not particularly smart animals. How do you communicate with them and get them to follow your instructions?
They're not smart, but they're terribly sensitive. So that if you learn what makes horses tick, what is horse psychology, then you can start to anticipate things that they will see, that they will experience when they're being trained in whichever kind of thing, jumping or dressage or galloping or cross country or whatever, and start to be able to find ways of transmitting what you want rather than what their reaction to it is. And you have achieved a level of trust and communication through the daily riding and training that they will listen to you, and they will go where they can't see the other side, and they will increase their speed when they know they're tired, and they will move left and right on command, whether there are people in huge numbers at the back of some fence and that the animal has never seen before.
Is the method of communication mostly verbal or nonverbal?
Nonverbal.
And how do you do that? Just by the way you touch and pull?
By the way you touch with your legs and by the way you receive their back when it moves and their sides when they move, and by the way your aids, the way you place your legs against them and coordinate that with your hands, by the timing between those two things.
You have to develop a sense of trust between you and the horse. The horse has to understand that if you tell him clearly what to do, which is your job, and he responds well, he's praised. And if he isn't, he's reprimanded. And that doesn't mean that we beat up our horses. But they know that they aren't doing right. And it has to be very clear to them, because they're not too bright, but they are very much creatures of habit. So if you can create the correct habit by your own sensitivity and by the horse having trust in you, then for the most part, they are very willing animals. They want to learn. They aren't resistant. But the way they show you that they don't understand is just by, well, they just kind of rebel. I mean, they refuse to move. Sometimes they get a little nasty and try to get rid of you. Doesn't happen too often.
What is it that you admire in the horses you work with?
Well, I admire their loyalty and their directness. Something that I always have a hard time with people is, if you ask them a question, getting a real, true, honest, straight answer. If you deal with the horse, if he's going to bite you, you know he's going to bite you. And every time he sees you, he'll try and bite you. And if he's going to kick you, he'll try and kick you. But he doesn't get you when your back is turned every once in a while. He's genuine. He deals with you the same if you deal with him genuinely. And I like dealing with horses' dispositions. I like dealing with their nervous systems. I enjoy coordinating that with mine.
Use of horses in sports dates back to the early days of civilization. But equestrian competition was not a part of the Olympic Games until the turn of the century. The United States did not have a team until 1950. Yet in the 8 Olympics since then, the U.S. 3-day event team has won 4 medals, 1 bronze, 2 silver, and 1 gold. The team, of course, did not participate in the 1980 Moscow Games. It's an impressive record for a country where popular support for the sport is spotty at best. Even though the margin between triumph and disaster is terribly narrow, the satisfaction of competition and the hope of victory lures them on.
I do all this and I work hard so that I can have the horses to compete that I have. And it's hard to realize that even though you ride a lot, you must sit on this horse and do a particular thing today if he is going to achieve the level that you're after. And I'm not going to let anything stop the training program, because when that stops, my whole world that I work for isn't what I'm after. And so I can't lose perspective of that.
After this 1984 NPR story aired, Bruce Davidson and horse J.J. Babu won a team gold at the Los Angeles Olympics. The reporter David Mulpas is now with IdeaStream in Cleveland. The producer was Carolyn Chadwick. Her latest project is Conservation Sound. The carriage race at the top of the hour is off the CD Radio Road Movies. And on the 2004 Deep Wireless collection from Toronto's New Adventures in Sound Art. You are hearing voices. Saddle up. This hour, we're on horseback. This music is by Hasselhound.
Brother finished off the green beans. Would you like a salad?
Down, always downhill she rides toward the sea through meadows scented with mint and basil under the forest's dark canopy beside a rushing stream where her horse dips his head to drink.
Watch your elbow. Oh, never mind. I'll get the towel.
Dew settles on her skin and she shivers, but on she rides, on and on to meet her lover by the sea.
There was some mail for you. I left it on the telephone stand in the hall.
On and on she rides to meet her lover, his letter folded and pressed against her heart. Meet me by the sea at the delta where the riverbed flows against the shore, my love, and never be lonely forevermore.
Your grandmother's coming over tomorrow. Maybe you could come home early and help me with dinner?
Soledad, Soledad, blood thicker than water, rides her night horse towards the place where the river gives itself to the sea, where love builds a fire and waits under the swimming stars, and the fish rise phosphorescent from the waves, and the sky floats timeless clear to the sunrise as tomorrow races towards her from the other side of the world.
For the dead horses in the sun, How am I supposed to get any riding done? All the tired horses in the sun, how am I supposed to get any riding done? All the tired horses in the sun, how am I supposed to get any riding done? All the tired horses in the sun, how am I supposed to get any riding done?
From Bob Dylan's 1970 self-portrait.
All the tired horses in the sun, how am I supposed to get it right?
And you heard singer Annie Gallup's poem, Thicker Than Water. That's off her 2005 album, Pearl Street. Coming up, A Day at the Races, in a minute, when we continue on horseback. This is Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
You are hearing voices. In 1979, Josh Darsa and an army of NPR sound recordists showed up trackside at Belmont Park, Long Island, to document a duel with a legend.
This is Josh Darsa. Eight riders in their silks were in the paddock that day for that race. Seven of them would be competing against the horse that had drawn the number five post position. The eighth rider, Ron Franklin, would be on Spectacular Bid, who already had won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. On this day, horse and rider would be attempting to win the Belmont Stakes and horse racing's Triple Crown. Spectacular Bid was the new wonder horse. Some felt he had no competition in this Belmont. His competition, they believed, was the ninth horse in the paddock. A horse with no rider, an immovable figure set in the middle of the green, cast in bronze, around whom everything seemed to circulate, even some of racing's famous.
It's my son, he came to see you ride when he was about this high, Manuel Icardi. He rode a horse called Hip Hip Hooray. Hip Hip Hooray or something at Belmont. The old Belmont.
Riders up!
It was only the statue of Secretariat that stood in the paddock. The great horse himself still is thriving in Kentucky. But it was here at Belmont, on a June afternoon, 6 years before, that he smashed the track and stakes record by winning the third leg of the Triple Crown in the incredible time of 2:24. It was here that Secretariat took his place with Man O' War, Count Fleet, and Citation as racing's best in this century. On this June afternoon, the Belmont record of 2:24 was in the forefront of many thoughts. Some wondered whether Spectacular Bid, who had won 12 consecutive races, could truly be compared to Secretariat. could win his duel with a legend.
Daryl, whack your teeth out. If I was Franklin, I'd whack him out. Daryl!
As the horses left the paddock to enter the passage leading to the track, one of the jockeys seemed to be singled out for special attention. He was Angel Cordero Jr., one of the leading riders in America. Some say the best. But Cordero, twice the age of 19-year-old Ron Franklin, had been feuding with the youngster. Franklin felt that Cordero's tactics in previous races they had contested were unsportsmanlike. Franklin had referred to Cordero and other Latin riders as spics. The animosity began during the winter racing season in Florida, and it reached a climax 3 days before the Belmont in the jockey room. 3 days before the contestants left the tunnel and emerged before the crowd. Wednesday evening, June 6th, 8 p.m. A conversation in Esposito's bar near the park with John Esposito and Belmont publicity man Frank Dwyer.
There will be fines made, levied on these two riders. No suspensions, fines will be levied tomorrow.
Who started the fight today, Frank?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. Well, you know what happened? Did you hear what happened in the race? Franklin was on Loreen and Cordero was on Ski Pants. Ski Pants came into Loreen and bumped at the start. And apparently they had words when they went back to the jocks room. When they got back to the jocks room, that's when all hell broke loose.
Very non-professional, unless you're a fighter.
Thursday morning, June 7th, 6:45 a.m. While early morning workouts take place at the track, Spectacular Bid's trainer, Bud Delp, holds court.
Ronnie told me that Cordero tried to drop him. Period. And if that's true, then I'm going to be very angry. Cordero can't stand the heat. Cordero's won more than anybody living. Ronnie's won less than anybody living. But evidently Cordero doesn't like the idea that Franklin's winning. It's professional jealousy on Cordero's part, I would say. And it's very childish. It shows absolutely no class. And you know, that's how it is.
Thursday afternoon, June 7th. The grandstand at Belmont Park, America's largest racing facility. No better is always right. But one man at the track must be. High in a booth, well above the three floors of betting bays, he must apply full concentration to his task. His name is Marshall Cassidy. Have you ever wondered how one learns to call a horse race?
You learn how to do it by doing it in a tape recorder. And it was a matter of mental association with the names of the horses. Spectacular Bid. The silks are black and blue. And I would imagine a blue piece of paper with very bold black printing on it, printing of a very large dollar sign and an immense figure in money value, and that would represent Spectacular Bid throughout the race. And of course, when the race is over, I would have to forget this, because should the owner's silks reappear in the succeeding race, I don't want Spectacular Bid to be in the succeeding race. I have a certain amount of confidence in my own ability to memorize, so I will memorize just like a not as important race. There will be no difference in the procedure.
For a big race like the Belmont, do you feel your adrenaline surging as most people here?
It's already begun. I'm higher than I would normally be already, and that'll be peaking about the seventh race on Saturday. And hopefully I will come down a little bit for the eighth race.
And is there a letdown?
Oh, an extreme letdown. I collapse at night.
And are you in sort of a limbo for the next few days?
Not having had the experience with so large a race before, no, I have not been. But it's possible. Who knows what could happen this weekend.
So, Marshall, this will be your first Belmont.
Yes, it will.
Large bill, sir?
50s are okay. You got 50s?
Neil on the rocks, lemon twist.
No, that's not mine.
Thursday evening, June 7th. A gala party for the press and their guests. Warm greetings are given to Ron Turcotte, the jockey who rode Secretariat to his Triple Crown in 1973. Earlier, Turcotte praises Spectacular Bid's record thus far, and then is asked to comment on the feud between Angel Cordero and Ron Franklin.
You know Angel a long time, right?
Yes.
Is he the type of guy that if somebody somewhere along the line calls him a spick, he remembers that a long time? He never forgets? Or is that something that stays with Angel?
No, I don't believe so. No, I don't believe Angel holds a grudge that way. Angel is a very competitive rider. He is the best horsebacker I've ever seen. There's one thing we call race riding, and there's nothing we call horsebacker. I mean, he can do anything on a horse. You know, I don't think there's a better race rider than Bill Shoemaker. I mean, he's never in trouble. He's at the right place at the right time, you know, all the time. And that's race riding. But he don't look nowhere close to Cordero on a horse, you know, I mean, as far as part of the horse and all that.
Friday morning, June 8th, 7:30 a.m. Spectacular Bid is being cooled off at Barn 13 after a workout. He has become the hub of Belmont's universe. National attention is focused on this latest celebrity, a smoke gray colt who cannot grant interviews. His rewards for success are a bucket of oats, some tender grooming, and continued adulation from his public, his owners, and his trainer.
I want him. He's got a long way to go tomorrow. And I want him lean. Like I said, I want him lean and mean. And that's the way you get him lean and mean. I might have trouble saddling him up there tomorrow afternoon. His horse is ready to run the race of his life tomorrow. This is the third leg of the Triple Crown. This is my main objective all along. I don't want to make any mistakes. I want him ready to break the track record of his horse in there and can run that fast. And that's how good he is. That's how good he is. We'll try to say. Excuse me.
Friday afternoon, June 8th. Records at the track are not always set by champions, but Belmont's list of record holders at longer distances reads like a who's who of racing's finest. The American teletimer system at Belmont ensures there is no margin for error. The man who operates the machine that will tell whether Spectacular Bid or another horse approximates Secretariat's record in the Belmont is Mark Turner.
Well, the race doesn't actually start from the starting gate. Many people don't know this. Starting gate is placed 60, 70 yards off of the start behind it so that when the horses get to the start, they have a running start and are at full speed. So, in between the time when the horses leave the starting gate and the time they get to the starting pole, I prime the machine to start, and as soon as they get to the pole, it starts automatically.
And the machine stops when the horses pass the finish line.
On the first horse.
Automatically, the machine
automatically
stops.
Uh-huh.
Saturday, June 9th.
Welcome to Belmont.
Racing form. Thank you.
The flutter of excitement that began among workers at the track even before the park opened now has gained a momentum that is surging through the quarter-mile-long clubhouse and grandstand. Past the betting bays, where nine races, not one, still are the business of the day.
$2 quinella, 2 and 7.
Beyond the paddock, into the gardens, where people stroll, eat, and enjoy. Thousands have come on this Saturday, not just to see a race, but to witness a coronation and the third Triple Crown champion in a row, following Seattle Slew's triumph in 1977 and the Firm's victory in 1978. In the jockey room, recreation takes other forms as the afternoon propels itself towards the eighth race, the big one. Ron Franklin, spectacular bids rider, will not arrive until later. He has not been seen much since the afternoon of the fight, other than a public appearance on Friday, where he and Angel Cordero shook hands and apparently made up. Meanwhile, Cordero spent some time in the jockey room playing cards with fellow riders. He seems confident, but his friends will not let him forget the drama that is swelling towards a climax.
I ain't worried about nothing now. I got everything going for me.
Sure, you're going to have more than that going for you in a couple of minutes. Wait and see.
I'll get rid of that sandwich.
And so, while their colleagues, who will not be riding in the Belmont, remain behind to watch the race on TV, eight jockeys make their way to the paddock area, where an expectant crowd gathers. People from large mansions in Westbury, Long Island, people from tenements in the South Bronx, all gather in the paddock, waiting.
Riders up!
Scores more are waiting, demonstratively, along the path that leads to the track, where nearly 60,000 people wait in the stands for the combatants to make their appearance. Millions more wait in their homes or in bars like Esposito's to see the contest on television. All are waiting to see the Belmont Stakes and a horse named Spectacular Bid attempt to win the Triple Crown, to challenge the record and the legend of Secretariat. All are saying aloud or inwardly, show us, show us, show us you are a champion. It is 5:33 p.m., Saturday, June 9th, 1979. The parade to the post by eight thoroughbreds, accompanied by the colorfully dressed outriders, is underway. Down the track, the handlers at the starting gate are preparing for the horses to be brought to their post positions. All of the principal elements of Belmont Stakes Week are going into place.
5 minutes.
Celebrity now has the lead with Scream King in second. Spectacular Bid is third. Gallant Best in fourth. Golden Act is fifth. General Assembly in sixth. Mystic Era seventh. And Coastal is eighth. Coastal now takes the lead. Mystic Era in second. General Assembly is third. Golden Act in fourth. And Gallant Best is fifth. Scream King in sixth. Spectacular Bid seventh. And King Celebrity is eighth in the blinkers. 4 minutes to post time.
$2 to win on six. $2 to show on one.
We can all win on eight.
$1 on five to win.
Come on, Hernandez! Come on, Hernandez! Help me the fire!
General Assembly 12-1. Spectacular battle down 1-5. Postal 7-2. And the New Yorkers are saying this is the upset horse. Mystic Gary on 90. Have a good race.
Number two. $2 to win?
Yeah, to win.
$5 to place on six.
$150 to win on the nine.
Fly me to the moon, or let me dream upon the sky.
Okay, that's on gear. Celebrity. Spectacular bid. Spring King, Gallant Best, Gold Man.
Close.
Nobody's open.
Not when they stop.
I'm gonna get rid of post time now. I'm going. It is now post time.
Maybe I need
you. Just a second here, boy.
Thank you, Jack. Now we got Coastal going into the back of the gate now. Coastal, ridden by Ruben Hernandez, the final horse to be loaded. Mystic Era, Jorge Velasquez aboard. They're all in line.
No.
And they're off. King Celebrity on the outside is Gallant Best. Gallant Best takes the lead now by a neck on the inside. Again, a spectacular bid. Then Golden Act, farther out is Coastal and a Mystic Era. Past the stands for the first time now. It's Gallant Best leading the way by two. Spectacular bid is second by a length on the outside is Coastal in third. Golden Act racing fourth, General Assembly in fifth by two. Along the inside is King Celebrity followed by Screen King and Mystic Era around the far turn. Gallant Best has a lead by four. It's Spectacular Bid in second by a length, and General Assembly is third by a half length. On the outside, Coastal in fourth by a length and a half, Golden Act in fifth by four. Then King Celebrity is sixth by two, Screen King in seventh, and Mystic Era is eighth. The first quarter in 23-2. They are really blazing away onto the backstretch now, and Gallant Best has the lead, but by only a neck. Moving up on the outside now is Spectacular Bid, and Spectacular Bid on the outside puts ahead in front. Gallant Best on the rail back into second now by three. Spectacular Bid draws clear now by a foot length. Gallant Best on the rail in second by four. General Assembly is third by three. Then Coastal in fourth by a length, Golden Act on the outside is by four. King Celebrity in fifth on the outside is Green King, followed by Mystic Era. Down the back stretch, the half in 47-3, three quarters in 11-5. General Assembly on the inside. General Assembly is now second by a half length. Gallant Best dropping back in second by a length and a half. Coastal moving up now in third. Golden Act also gaining ground around the far turn. It is Spectacular Bid in command by three. General Assembly is second by a length. Golden Act on the outside moving up in third. Coastal gains ground on the rail at the top of the stretch. It is Spectacular Bid. He has the lead by three.
But Secretary is all alone. He's out there almost a 16th of a mile away from the rest of the horses. Secretary is in a position that seems impossible to catch. He's into the stretch. Secretary leads his field by 18 lengths. And now Price approaches taking second.
quickly to now and down the stretch. Spectacular bit on the outside. It is Coastal on the inside. Those two now vying for the lead, and Coastal puts ahead in front. Spectacular bit back into second. Golden Act is third, approaching the 16th pole. It is an upset now. Coastal has the lead by three. Spectacular bit on the inside. Coastal on the outside. It is Coastal in front. And under the wire, an upset in this, the Belmont Stakes. Coastal, the supplemented horse. Coastal, owned by William Hagen Perry, trained by David Whiteley, ridden by Ruben Hernandez. The upset winner of the Belmont Stakes. A very tight photo between Spectacular Bit and Golden Act for place and show positions in the Belmont. The time for the race, 2:28.35. And now back to Jack.
No spectacle in the world of sports is harder to accept than the unexpected fall of a popular idol. Within moments after Coastal sped by the finish line, words were being carved and flashed to all points. The press box at Belmont Park took on a rhythm of its own. But while words by the thousands were being communicated to the public at a frantic pace, one word really stood out above the rest. Why? Why did Spectacular Bid, the Wonder Horse, lose?
He jumps at the best horse won, beat a season. And when we asked him if he thought the kid walked too soon, he said, at first he said not really, and then he said, well, maybe if he didn't walk quite so soon, we would have saved second. But the other horse beat a season, the winner.
He had no criticism of the kid, really.
You could see the horse had nothing left. He whipped him. He wanted him to respond. He asked the horse to go, and the horse didn't go. He had nothing left. There is no horse alive or ever possibly that could win wire to wire around this track, the exception maybe of the Secretariat, who had to be the greatest.
I am sometimes reminded of Grantland Rice's dictum that there is a certain element of chance in horse racing. That's all I can say.
Four floors below, in the jockey room, there is pandemonium. Ruben Hernandez, the winning jockey, is the hero. But Angel Cordero, who finished seventh in an eight-horse field, seizes the stage and the public address microphone as if he has won and is the celebrity of the day. Ruben, shouts Cordero, on behalf of all the New York riders from Panama, Puerto Rico, Mexico, and Venezuela, I congratulate you. In his own way, through his friend and fellow Latin, Ruben Hernandez, Angel Cordero has won because Ron Franklin and Spectacular Bid have lost.
What happened to the super horse? Charles Canty, tell me about it. What happened to the super horse? He wasn't so super. Where's my saddle?
In another part of the jockey room, Ron Franklin, the 19-year-old rider of the beaten favorite, who has come up short for the Triple Crown, presents a sad, subdued counterpoint to his volcanic Latin nemesis as he tries to answer the question, why?
I had a lot of horse, but it just wouldn't give it to me.
As for Bud Delp, Spectacular Bid's outspoken trainer, well, he was difficult to find after the race. Defeat had never been in his thoughts. The following day, he would reveal that on the morning of the race, Spectacular Bid had stepped on a safety pin, perhaps hurting his chances for victory. But Delp's words and attitude in the period before the race were the focus of disputes that went on for hours that Saturday night.
His ego today told him that he had the best horses, which is what he'd been saying for two or three months. His ego told him that this horse was going to break the track record. It's the way he trained him, it's the way the jockey rode him, and unfortunately he didn't have the horse to do it. And that's it. It was an ego problem.
What were the orders to the rider? That's the problem. No one will know that, right?
For most, this day's business is done. And for many, it took place during slightly less than 2.5 minutes of frenzied activity after history's gates snapped open. and a horse named Spectacular Bid leaped out to seize an opportunity, but slipped away after one lap around the mile and a half track. Perhaps the horse can still prove his greatness at Saratoga or elsewhere. Greatness is something that can accumulate with a progression of successes. Even Secretariat lost on occasion. To make history, however, to win the Triple Crown, you must seize the moment, as Secretariat did convincingly 6 years before in his record-setting Belmont. On this occasion, in this Belmont Stakes, Spectacular Bid did not, and lost his duel with a legend.
Duel with a Legend. Written and produced by Josh Darsa. Technical director was Skip Peasy. Field engineering by Paul Blakemore, Skip Peasy, and Seal Muller. Technical assistance from John Widoff and Dave Glasser. Production associate was Deborah Jane Lamberton. Editorial assistance by Neil Conan. Funds for this program were made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.